Okay.
Und ja, dann legen wir mal los. Ja, liebe Zuhörer, schönen guten Abend. Diesmal eine etwas andere Sendung der Linux Lounge. Wie angekündigt, das 38C3 Special. Und ihr hört auch diesmal keinen Opening-Jingle von uns, weil wir nicht an unserem üblichen Streaming-Equipment sind, sondern gerade beim Sendegate sind, Sendezentrum, Entschuldigung. Und wer das nicht kennt, das ist einfach die Podcast-Community der Chaos-Bubble. Und hier sind einfach Leute, die großartigerweise sagen, hey, wir stellen euch Equipment bereit, wir stellen euch einen Stream bereit, setzt euch an unseren Tisch und da könnt ihr irgendwie rumquatschen. Und das haben wir uns nicht nehmen lassen, deswegen haben wir uns hingesetzt. Und mit mir ist auch der Chris.
Hallöche.
Und der Dennis.
Hallo.
Und wir haben noch gleich einen Gast, den stelle ich gleich nochmal vor. I will introduce you in a second. Das ist aber, wie ihr vielleicht gehört habt, unser Gast spricht Englisch, deswegen wird ein Teil unserer Sendung heute auf Englisch sein, aber ich gehe davon aus, dass das kein Problem für euch ist. Und hier wird am Tisch noch etwas geschaffelt. Ah, sehr gut.
Es kommen noch Zuhörende dazu.
Juhu. Sehr gut. Ja, ich begrüße auch unsere Zuhörenden. Ihr hört diese Live-Atmo, ihr hört die Geräusche im Hintergrund. Verzeiht, wenn jetzt zwischendurch ein bisschen Krach ist, aber das gehört zum Kongress dazu.
Absolut.
Und
ja, letztes Jahr hatten wir die Special Atmo, glaube ich, die Gulaschkanone, die vorbeigeschoben
wurde. Das Klimpern von der Gulaschkanone.
Ja, das war großartig.
Alles ja. Klar.
Gut.
Dennis, Chris, bevor wir gleich loslegen, irgendwas, was ihr sagen wollt, was ist euer Aufhänger hier an dem Abend, wo wir unsere Sondersendung 38C3 haben?
Für mich ganz persönlich, ich werde mit euch gleich in dem Zwischenteil gerne nochmal, bevor wir zu unserem eigentlichen kleinen Programmpunkten, die wir vorbereitet haben, kommen, also nach dem Interview, werde ich auf jeden Fall nochmal gerne ein, zwei Dinge erzählen, die mich besonders beeindruckt haben, so beim Rundgehen durch den C3, wo ich gesagt habe, so, wow, das muss man den Leuten erzählen, dass es das gibt.
Genau, ich bin heute mal ganz anders unterwegs als sonst, nämlich meistens bin ich in irgendwelchen Assemblies unterwegs oder irgendwie fest eingeplant. Und sagen wir mal, abgesehen von der Linux Lounge gibt es sonst nichts, wo ich bisher eingeplant war. Und das ist eine ganz komische andere Wahrnehmung des Kongresses, aber dazu später mehr.
Okay. Und mir fällt auch auf, wir haben wahrscheinlich einige Zuhörer, die uns noch gar nicht kennen. Vielleicht auch nochmal zwei Worte, um es kurz vorzustellen. Also wir sind die Linux Lounge. Es gibt auch eine amerikanische Linux Lounge. Das sind wir nicht. Das ist die Linux Lounge of the Radio CC, wenn ihr danach sucht. Und wir senden ungefähr einmal im Monat über News aus Open Source, aus Linux-Welt, was so passiert, irgendwelche Tipps und Tricks aus dem Gaming-Bereich. Also Chris und Dennis sind Linux-Gamer. Und wir würden uns freuen, auch wenn ihr mal so reinhört, uns gibt's in dem Podcast-Player eurer Wahl, könnt ihr uns hinzufügen und dann quatschen wir euch die Ohren voll, mit was so dem letzten Monat in Linux passiert ist.
Und dann haben wir am Ende der Sendung nochmal eine größere Ankündigung, die wichtig ist für das kommende Jahr, wie wir das so ausgestalten werden, dazu aber auch später mehr. Deswegen lohnt es sich auf jeden Fall bis zu Ende dabei zu sein.
Cliffhanger. Grandios, Dennis.
Gut gemacht.
Okay. At this point, I would like to switch to English, as I announced. So I hope we are not losing now listeners and that you still can understand us. Because we have a special guest with us. It's someone who the story behind it is quite funny, because there's a project we've talked about on the Linux Lounge before. It's called I2P, it's an anonymity network. And I'm an avid user of it for many years and have been playing around with it and have been trying some things on it. And I used to meet some people on the Congress, but after a while, like the meetups got smaller or wasn't arranged or something. As like last Congress, I think it was, I thought, well, let's at least have a little introduction so to show some people the project still exists, is kicking, is developing, it's advancing. So I have a little presentation. I'm not like an authority to speak about it. I'm not like super so knowledgeable, but at least I can present it a little bit. So I did a self-organized session, which is a kind of thing you can do on the Congress to just show something to people. I sat down with my I2P shirt, had a little presentation, and then someone came along, and this someone was very knowledgeable, told to people lots of cool stuff, and mentioned, by the way, I'm the maintainer of I2P. And that's how I met IDK. And this year also he's here and I was like, hey, why don't you want to join us and tell us a little bit about I2P? So in contrast to how we usually start our show, I would begin with a little interview and talk a little bit with you about I2P. So first of all, hello IDK, nice to see you.
Nice to see you again.
Great. Maybe I gave a little introduction how we met, but would you like to add something? Would you like to say something about yourself or who you are and what is your relation to the project I2P?
Well, I actually started out as a volunteer back in between 2014 and 2015. I was mostly, at the time, I think what they were struggling with was the implementation of a browser. There were some people working on a...
Yeah, microphone. Perfect.
That better? Okay.
Yeah, amazing.
What they were struggling with at the time was the implementation of a browser. And eventually, I think somebody reached out to me on... Well, let me go back a bit. My initial thought was even further than that. I was working at a hotel as a night auditor. And if anybody's familiar with what a night auditor does, it's about 20 minutes of ninth grade math homework at the beginning of the night, and then there's 8 hours where you do whatever the hell you want. And I was, you know, I was bored, and also I didn't want to keep making minimum wage for the rest of my life, so I started learning how to code and how to how to work with Linux, and doing some honestly pretty ill-advised things to my laptop. But then I realized that not only did I2P not have much of a presence on any ClearNet forums, but the biggest ClearNet forum I could find for I2P was on Reddit. And basically, no one was answering questions, and all of the answers that were coming out were bad. So I made it my sort of personal mission to make sure that every question that got asked on r/I2P got a good, thoughtful answer. About a year later, the project reached out to me and said, you know, we're having trouble with some usability issues. The long and short of it was that people were having a pretty hard time configuring their browsers successfully in a way that wasn't actually fairly dangerous. The instructions prior to me coming in and fixing them didn't include things like disabling WebRTC peer connection, and which was still a proxy escape vector at that point. And so what my first project for them was to write a suite of scripts that would automatically configure a browser that existed on the host machine already, because we really didn't have the infrastructure to maintain something as complex as Tor browser. And I actually still maintain that sub-project to this day. It's changed form considerably. It's gone from being a little script to a fully-fledged profile manager in Java and all kinds of things like that. It's part of a plug-in. We can put it in the main distribution if we want to. So that was my first project with I2P, and I was pretty successful at it. And so they started bringing me closer into the project and giving me more responsibilities.
You mean you didn't run away fast enough?
No, I didn't run away fast enough. Yeah. exactly. So that was more or less my onboarding process. I actually took on the role of onboarding other people for a year, and then they realized, oh, this guy's doing stuff, and brought me in. That year I met ZZZ for the first time at DEF CON, and then I met Sadie for the first time in Toronto at a conference that doesn't happen anymore called R Networks. It died during COVID. So kind of got familiar with the major players in the project at the time, and the year after that was my first Congress. It's the first time I came here. Well, Leipzig.
That was how long ago?
2017.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe we should like take half a step back and actually tell the people who are listening, maybe they don't know what I2P is used for and what's actually the purpose of I2P. I mean, before we get into the depths of the project, maybe can you give like a short introduction? What would I use I2P for? What is it about?
Okay. Well, it's a you know, that's actually maybe two different questions, but I would say, what do you use I2P for? I2P is an anonymous overlay network, and it is different from Tor in that it doesn't rely on a centralized consensus to figure out what the nodes are. That's the primary difference. There are a number of other differences along the way, but that's the primary difference. The other main difference is that there are no exit. There's no exit capacity, officially speaking, but there is. But everyone who joins the network is both a relay and a client. And there's a top. There's a question that's going to come up here in a little bit that where that is going to be relevant. The result of this is that we have some characteristics that are a little bit different than Tor. We have a tremendous amount of relay diversity compared to Tor, as you might expect, because we have 50,000 or so user relays. And
do we have like numbers for Tor and I2P compared to relays?
Tor has between 4,000 and 5,000 relays on any given day, and I2P has between 45,000 and 50,000 relays on any given day.
Ten times.
On the other hand, though, Tor has almost 1 million users any given day, and probably more by now. Whereas the number of users for I2P is more or less that same 50,000 constant. This is probably a consequence of some of our philosophy decisions and some of our design decisions and things like that. Not having exit capacity means that the only people who are using it are people who are using it to either operate hidden services or communicate with hidden services. So we have a lot of people who use it to SSH into their desktop at home, or people who are using it to host a Matrix server for them and their friends. We actually have somebody who even wrote a Minecraft plugin for it that only uses I2P for its NAT traversal properties and sets up zero hop tunnels between a Minecraft server and a Minecraft client.
So you actually have some decent latency.
Oh yeah, yeah. We've managed to, especially in the past few years, we've had some transport upgrades that both decrease the complexity of our transports, increase their performance, and make it a lot clearer how they operate. We've migrated from some fairly custom. Custom OBFS4 based stuff to a noise XK based scheme with padding and a scheme where we actually encrypt the ephemeral key before we send it across the wire as part of the noise XK handshake with a key that is stored in the distributed hash table in order to obfuscate it from an adversary who's trying to observe the handshake to determine who's participating in it. And of course, that doesn't necessarily work against an active adversary, but it's fairly effective against a passive adversary. So
doing passive traffic monitoring, for example, like your ISP or someone sitting in between your link.
Yes, exactly like that. But to the second question, what is the idea? Well, the reason that we do things this way if you think about the internet, it was designed as it was designed prior to people being concerned about privacy. There were a lot of things that have started happening fairly ubiquitously in the past 30 years that just didn't enter into the model. My favorite example, because it's so visceral, is things like swatting. Swatting is only really possible because it is possible to get your information. it is really just that simple. This I see as a problem that shouldn't exist. Moreover, the thing about anonymity is it's like many things in this space, a one-way function. You only get to give away anonymity. You don't really get to give it back. You can switch pseudonyms. There's a lot of elaboration that you can go under to like minimize the damage from leaking your personal information. But at the end of the day, more or less, that once you lose anonymity, you don't really get it back, at least not in the same context. it only goes one way. So my thinking with I2P is that because we can do things, we can scale in different ways than Tor, and because we aren't relying on centralized consensus, we can solve a different, possibly slightly grander problem than Tor. As I said to you last night, my dream is 8 billion I2P users. I think that people should consider anonymity the default.
It should
someday.
Be a default, yeah.
Yeah.
Not an opt-in, but the default.
Yeah.
But we glossed about a little fact you mentioned earlier before, that most the participants in the network are routers which route among the network, and you can route to hidden services which are in the I2P network, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean you can't access the ClearNet. Because, in fact, if you install I2P, there is one of the services which is pre-configured is someone running a public proxy. So you can also use I2P to access the ClearNet, right?
Yes, you can. Although this is sort of an unofficial capacity. Like, the way the application is actually structured is it's more like 6 applications. Well, I mean, depending on where you draw the lines. At the bottom layer, there is, and I'm going to simplify things here, there's the router itself that handles the actual maintenance of the network and the self-organization aspects of it. It maintains a copy of, a view of the DHT, not a copy of the DHT, a view of the DHT that keeps track of the peers, and it's where you get the peers that you want to build your route, build your tunnels through, and things like that. And then on top of that, there are APIs, and you use these APIs to build application. And then on top of that, in the Java distribution, there's a suite of applications that we use to showcase the capabilities of it. And we've got a BitTorrent client, and we've got an email client, and we've got a suite of different kinds of proxies and reverse proxies and things like that.
So to emphasize this, I2P is not only a project for like accessing a hidden service or accessing the ClearNet, but it also provides this API, and you can build on top of these APIs without needing to get down to all the cryptographic entities, but you can use the API to integrate it into other things. So.
Oh yeah, they're just sockets. Yeah,
We had mentioned Minecraft server. Have some more examples of what kind of applications, what comes with I2P when you install it? I mean, I know some software that comes with it.
What it comes with is the most popular application is probably the torrent client. It's called I2P Snark, based on a much older torrent client that actually doesn't exist as a torrent client anymore, called Snark. I think you can find its old web page. It's got a bunch of Alice in Wonderland jokes. The most popular application is probably BitTorrent, followed by email. We have maybe the last standing email service that anybody can sign up for over a proxy at this point. I don't even think Proton Mail lets you like sign up over Tor anymore, which is absurd. But maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong. We've had a long-standing email client run or email service run by an operator named Postman, who I don't know where he finds the time, but God bless him for doing it. Then the service you were talking about is actually an attachment onto the HTTP proxy application that routes it to a group in Texas called Stormy Cloud. And they're a nonprofit organization that used to run Tor relays, and now they've actually shut down most of their Tor relays and sent them to it, and I think they I think they gave them to another organization to run or something like that. I'm not quite sure about the actual outcome there, but the result, but they repurposed their infrastructure basically entirely around our outproxy infrastructure, and that was, we're very grateful to them for that. That said, though, this is still sort of exists high above, as about as high above the router infrastructure as you could imagine. You build your tunnel, and or you build your HTTP proxy, and it calls out to the API to build a tunnel. And at the other side of that tunnel, there's another person with an HTTP proxy going the other direction. And at the end of that, they've set up the out proxy. So it's not, strictly speaking, a part of the I2P software. It's more like a configuration setting that we set by default.
Yeah, basic proxy, reverse proxy to access the HIN services.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when we last night you also talked about, we got a bit technical. I mean, I know it's quite a complex topic where the consequences of choosing the wrong cryptographic entities or like minor decisions can cause major problems in the anonymity. But you mentioned like the distributed hash table implementation of I2P is quite special.
Yeah.
Maybe get a little bit into the technical details for those who...
Well, almost everybody who uses a distributed hash table doesn't really care about anonymity. And that is, justifiable for most of them. But in I2P, we do. And this introduces a problem because we use a DHT to build the routing table and maintain the network state. So we need to be able to communicate with the DHT, but we need to be able to do it in a way that doesn't cause an information leak. And the kind of information leak that we're most concerned about, well, there are two kinds of information leaks that we're concerned about with the DHT, but the kind that we're most concerned about is an information leak that it links non-anonymous information to anonymous information. So you have a router that is contactable directly, and that the information required to contact that router is available in the DHT. But you also have these, you also have hidden services, and the hidden service information, which consists of the actual endpoint that you need to connect your tunnel to connect to the hidden service, that is intended to be anonymous, of course. And the other property that comes into play here is that you can send information into the DHT either by sending it directly to a router, or you can send it through a client and have it go to the client instead. And we use these for different things. Some people might have picked up on how the old attack, it doesn't exist anymore, worked. But if you were to, for instance, not have any protections in place, you could create a fake tunnel endpoint information and push it into somebody's DHT by sending it to a client, and then request it back out directly. And if you can do that successfully, then what you've done is you've linked a piece of non-anonymous information to a piece of anonymous information, and that's very destructive. So what we've done to mitigate this is that we don't actually, our DHT doesn't actually look like one DHT anymore. It's a sort of tree of DHTs, where there's a main trunk DHT that exists for the router context, and it receives the things that you're communicated to you directly. And then there is there are these sub DHTs that in each client gets one. And when you send a message to a client now, it only ever goes into the sub DHT, and it never makes its way into the trunk DHT. So the result of this is that we actually mitigated that whole attack class, which was highly complex at a certain point. We had about a half a dozen or so variations on the attack that were like linked client to router info by like putting in an invalid date into a fake lease set and then pushing it into the DHT and then requesting it back out of a router. And then sometimes you could, or then there was other situations where you could send a router info directly, or you could send a router info directly that contained someone else's IP address in it.
If we're talking about attacks and possibly issues, one of the problems can be that you, if there's an issue, that the anonymity breaks down. But if someone is interested, like, hey, this project sounds interesting, the new concepts, I want to explore it, I want to use it, is it dangerous to run I2P for me as a normal user? Does it?
No, not on average. And we do take
not on average. That's a diplomatic answer.
we do take the thing into account, though. Like, so suppose there are different contexts in which people might be using this. You know, if you're here in the EU, chances are there's not very much danger at all.
Talking about countries like China or something, where when you run a Tor relays or something, you can already get into trouble without any technical problem, but just by the fact of running it.
Yeah, well, in China, it is illegal to route packets for other people, route traffic for other mm-hmm. people, with the purpose of keeping their information private. You can't run a VPN service in China and things like that, or at least not a privacy-focused VPN.
But I2P, I wouldn't be able to see what other nodes are routing over my service, so I can't be made liable even if someone tries to make me, like, you routed something bad. No, I can't know what I'm routing, so...
Yeah, well, and that certainly will work in most of the world, mm-hmm. But in places like China, what we do instead is we put the routers into what we call hidden mode, and hidden mode changes the DHT behavior again. You, instead of publishing your own router info into the DHT so that other people can build tunnels through you, you just don't publish it. It never appears in the DHT. So the only way anybody ever knows if you're using your router is if you connect to them directly. And then the other component that gets switched on in hidden mode is we determine the country. We just ship a static GeoIP file with the database file with the router, and we use that to determine which country the router is in and which country the peers are in. So if you are in China and you are in hidden mode, you won't connect to other routers in countries that automatically go into hidden mode. So that's Russia, Iran, North Korea, Turkmenistan, you know, places that have much more draconian policies on what you can route. And this is, you know, in this justification ends up being, being different in different countries. Sometimes you just want to be hidden. But in the case of China, what I think is interesting is that what we're actually doing here is making I2P comply with the local law. Because it is no longer routing for mm-hmm. other people, especially not other Chinese citizens. So we're actually consciously trying to make sure that it operates in a safe way, especially in the most dangerous context where people use it. And that is the point of the way that hidden mode operates. And this is a feature that only exists in the Java I2P router. There's a C++ version that's maintained by an independent team, mostly working out of, but the C++ team, on the other hand, finds hidden mode somewhat philosophically reprehensible. It's like you're making judgments about the country that people are in and changing the software's behavior based on what you assume is their use case. And they think that is quite controversial. I think we're being practical.
I believe if you are in a position, be it in one of these countries or for some other reason, you believe that you have some adversaries that have this kind of influence, power, or possibilities, you should very well understand technical level what you're using, be it I2P Tor or whatever else. But so in quotation marks, regular user, I could just fire up a node and it routes only among the hidden network. And in this mode, I'm supporting the network, but I'm not really making anything public that puts me into a problem. So by default, I can just run a node, support the network, and this is perfectly fine. And I can decide to what services I publish and how and so.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Essentially.
Okay. And I mean, I hope that we have some listeners who maybe got curious and want to try out I2P. Are there some areas where you say, like, this is the kind of new people we are looking for, something where we would need help, some projects or some... What, where would you like to have people join I2P and help out?
Oh, gosh. I think people don't really understand just how much even a tiny bit of help helps. We are having a lot of, having a lot better luck with that over the past 2 years or so. But for a while there, it seemed like we were just losing contributors left and right. And the result of this was a whole lot of scope creep for me. And also for my predecessor ZZZ, who had the same basic scope creep problem. We've got a lot of stuff in the ecosystem that could use a maintainer who isn't me. In particular, there's a piece of software that we use called Tahoe Laughs. It is a distributed data store that used to work over I2P, but the tools that they used to set it up have broken in the meantime, and I've not gotten around to fixing them. Somebody could work on those. Basically, anything written in Python on there in our ecosystem, I would love to not have to work on anymore, including our website.
Dennis is smiling.
Including our website, which is actually still on Python 2, living in a virtual machine that we can just reboot all the time because I don't want to. Because I don't want to go to the trouble of updating it since it's so freaking ancient and I don't really know Python very well. It's also weird. It's this upside down Flask app is what I call it, written by a physicist 20 years ago.
Story sounds familiar for some Python projects.
So, yeah. Yeah, I remember.
But it's interesting because on our Linux launch we have talked about different open source projects and that there's a one part where you have a cool algorithm, a cool concept you want to try out, you make a project, but then there's like keeping up with the issue tracker, mm-hmm. keeping up with the contact information, keeping up with the community requests, with people screaming, why are you not putting this feature, or you are stupid for putting that feature. Mm-hmm. And this is like a really exhausting job, and I can only believe it's so much worse if you are in a kind of setting where anonymity and like greater stakes are at place. So I can really imagine that this is putting a lot of stress onto you. So, like, on behalf of nobody, because I have no idea if our listeners are already using I2P, but thank you very much for taking up all this work. And especially interesting, like you mentioned, people hear about the distributed hash table, the kind of attacks, which sounds really complicated if you're not into cryptography. Mm-hmm. But even if you are like a lonely Python programmer knowing how to run some website builder frameworks or something, mm-hmm. even that could help. Mm-hmm. How could people find I2P? How could they contact people? How could they get involved? Where to send the people?
Okay, well, the main entry point for us would probably be getI2P.net. I also run a GitLab server, which is the official Git of I2P, which is i2pgit.org. And that is mirrored into I2P as git.idk.itp. And we also accept pull requests and issues on GitHub. We keep those in sync, obviously. Let's see. I had one more. Oh, IRC. We have an in-network IRC server, IRC2P, and that is the official chat channel for talking to the devs. Although most of us will, or at least I will certainly get back to people on either on forums, on Reddit, on Matrix, anywhere.
I sometimes get joked at in our show when I mention IRC because I used to use IRC a lot. I'm still using a bit of IRC, but actually compared to Matrix, if you chat someone, it isn't not decrypting all the messages and having all the things not working, which is sometimes work. But it's a different topic. So, I can recommend the I2P network, the IRC network on I2P. Lots of different kinds of people and channels and things to get involved with. Anything else? Oh.
Yep. I just have two other questions. One of them is how the community, how the governance structure of the whole project is, because it's mostly people who volunteer. Mm-hmm. We've seen in Rust, for example, that the governance structure, or many different other projects, that the governance structure is very important for the forthcoming of the whole project. How is that in I2P?
Honestly, I'm going to have to say I'd say it's inadequate. It's, you know, in theory, a community-driven project. However, in practice, I ended up being the maintainer alone for a pretty good long time. And I'm also running the Git server. So, unfortunately, there is a degree to which I kind of act as the gatekeeper for merges. And that's not ideal, and I acknowledge that. And I'd like to be able to change that, but I'm not quite sure how to. That said, though, I'm not some kind of bear. There are some things that I probably will never let in, mostly because of ethical or safety concerns. But I try to be very open to the ideas that are put forward in the community, and if somebody puts forth enough effort to write us some code, in my heart I want to merge it. If it's not good, I won't. But at the end of the day, I want people participating.
Which is a danger in open source projects. If you're a maintainer and you look at merge requests and you go like, oh, someone put in the effort, I should merge it, but I really don't know if this is the right thing, and actually I don't, but I'm afraid to reject people. This is also, sometimes people do shitty code. Yeah. And in such a security-sensitive project, you don't want to have shitty code. So everyone does shitty code. But... But yeah, this is, I imagine, difficult. But Dennis, yes,
Just another question, because the Fediverse is one of our main topics we have in our podcast. So is there the ability, because you talked about APIs and libraries that may be possible to connect with existing software and existing social networks, might there be a chance to connect the idea of the Fediverse, or maybe services of the Fediverse, with I2P?
Yes, yes, it's absolutely possible, and I've been, I've been quietly trying to make it more possible over the past few years, with a considerable amount of success lately. Last year, I met with the team running the Dendrite Matrix implementation downstairs in last year's CDC, and we discussed it. And while I was there, I wrote a prototype of a Matrix over I2P server using Dendrite and one of our APIs and one of the Go implementations of a library for our API. And the whole thing takes about 15 minutes to figure out, because all you're doing is, every language has abstract types. You're just replacing an abstract type with, you're taking an abstract type and giving it an implementation that uses I2P rather than the ClearNet. That's all you're doing. And that's all it takes to add support. So I added support for using Matrix over I2P and federating Matrix servers over I2P to Dendrite. I also added Tor at the same time, because it's basically the same process. And so now there is this PureGo Dendrite Matrix server that you can deploy on I2P with, I think, three commands, if I recall correctly. You know, you download the file, you generate a config, and you launch your server. That is that I consider a pretty big success. The other notable one, I think, in that category, although it's not federated yet, is before Giddy forked into Forjo and some of the other projects, I actually went in and convinced them to make the function that spawns the socket that they listen on a thing that you can go in and write a new implementation of. So you can, because they didn't want to add I2P support directly, what you can do instead is you can just add this one
.go plugin. Like a plugin?
Yeah. You just add this one .go file to this one directory and recompile it, and it always works, and there's never a merge conflict because it's just all it contains is just this one function that you use to replace this other function. And once you have that, it sets up a Giddy service all over I2P using again just a very simple 1-2 command setup. And that, you know, that kind of beats the Tor model in my thinking, because you're using the because in Tor, you know, you've got to go and you've got to be root and you've got to edit a directory and generate keys in that directory, and then you got to look at the there's a bunch of stuff you have to do that ultimately are barriers to entry, and I think it's the wrong way to do it if your goal is to onboard lots and lots of people. You want to do things safely and right automatically.
So I think what we've heard, there's like a million different things you can do with I2P on different levels you can approach, and I think we could probably talk for another hour or two probably, but looking a bit at the time, I would like to is there something you say in the end which is still something we missed, something you wanted people know, or
I'm not quite sure. I would really encourage people who want to get involved to look into, in particular, what we call the SAMv3 API. It stands for Simple Anonymous Messaging version 3, obviously. And it is it's the API I was talking about that ends up giving you sockets that you can treat just like sockets. It's the main way that we interface with non-Java languages. It is very easy to use, and usually, especially if you are working in a language that treats sockets or treats the baseline socket as an abstract type, you can usually make something that is a drop-in replacement for
which is most network-based stacks in most languages.
Yeah, at this point, it is. There's nothing that looks like forwarding involved to a person who uses a piece of software that you write with that you write in this way. There's actually very rarely anything that even looks like a setup involved in software that you operate this way. It works just like anything that people would expect of their normal apps.
I do really hope that maybe after hearing this podcast, there's one or two developers out there who have applications who think like, hey, maybe this is a good transportation layer, maybe I look into it. So I really, really thank you very, very much for taking the time to get dragged along by some random guy and sit down and have a podcast with us. Thank you very much for sharing everything and telling the viewers a little bit about I2P. So thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
I would also before we still have a little bit of show left, and we usually when we do our Linux launch, we talk about Linux updates and software updates. But I would like to use a few minutes to talk about the Congress itself, because I mean we are on the fucking Chaos Communication Congress, and I want to have some impressions. I also made some notes, but maybe Dennis or Chris, one of you wants to share a little bit about what did you experience on the Congress, what it's like, and.
The first thing I wanted to add is that I was surprised another time by the sheer curiosity and the creations that these brilliant minds here in this this Congress did create. Like, for example, what impressed me most was the talk about the clay PCB, which I didn't know it was possible to have a PCB on clay, yeah. on burnt clay. That's amazing. That someone just thought about, well, let's try that. If it works, it works. And it seems to work somehow. They are a bit bulky, but it's fine. I really appreciate the art section that we have here at the Congress, because there's always something new to learn about yourself when looking at art. And I think paired with technical details here and there, there are every new discoveries you have to make here at the Congress. And also, one talk I want to emphasize about was for me the talk of Anne Roth about the way digitization of services especially of government services are made in the EU and especially in Germany, and that there are many more things to do and to make more to be loud about doing the right things to digitalize the society in a safe way, in a sane way, and to keep everyone on track, whether they are teens or elderly of 18 or older. And I think that's very important to emphasize on.
All right, I have been to the talk about the EPA, the electronic patient.
Elektronische Patientenakte.
Yeah.
We are in Germany.
Yeah. that's a German thing, yeah.
Folder for patients? I'm not sure. Directory, I think.
Yeah, maybe.
The country of the stupidly long words. So.
Yeah. Chain words.
You guys are the master of the portmanteau.
So it has been, I can't say it has been a lot of fun. it was... just another typical the German state can't do anything right in relation to IT or IT security or decentralization authorization, and Bianca Kastel and I don't recall the other other guy the other other speaker they presented it as in a very low and serious tone. But they could have screamed it from the mountaintops that the authentication is not working well. That you can take hardware which you can buy on eBay and use it to get authenticated to the whole database of patient records. Ooh. And that is just unbelievable how stupid. This is version 3, I have to say. This is version 3 of the standard of the EPA.
Yeah. It's just improved on the stupidity 3 times.
Yeah.
Yeah, it did.
So I started with the content, but just take a step back. I was here at day 0, like most of the time I'm here at day 0. And it's kind of strange because you are there at the evenings and some lights are not toned down, and most of the time it is a very, very not that dark like it's now, and it's just a special vibe when you come into the day 1 and everything is set up. Most of the time, not everything is set up, but
it's chaos after.
Yeah. But the vibes are on. Yeah, you are at the Congress and you feel it directly.
Yeah.
So the difference between day 0 and day 1 are just—it's just amazing. And I have been to a talk about democratic schools, which was a talk that has been already has been presented last year, but democratic schools in Germany, and it's just so interesting how that relates, how we learn here directly, most of the time self-taught, sometimes taught by mentors to learn very different, very new things that are interesting to us. and how you could do that in the structure of a school that is free from pressure, free from authority most of the time, and very non-hierarchical learning, which we just celebrate here at the Congress. I was at a workshop at the Hexen, I can say the feminist part, the feminist subgroup in the
subgroup.
For women, trans people, non-binary, yeah. And they talked about the experience about sexist behavior, mm-hmm. Not only at the Congress but in hackerspaces and so on, and how to deal with that in a very low part. So just cutting someone off is one part, but being hard is another one, and how to deal with that. And it was very interesting because prevention was one of the main parts that has been on my mind lately, because it's not just about to get to the awareness team and then get some people out of the Congress or out of the hackerspace. That the exclusion of some people is not the main part of that, but you have to start very early to get engaged when things are happening in a very low degree. And just not being silent is one of the main takeaways about these this awareness workshop. So I can recommend that to talk with the Hexen, with many different people, with the awareness team here at the Congress, and to take that in your own hands if you're a cis dude, especially, to take that to heart and into your hack spaces and everywhere where you go.
Okay. And for me, actually, the interesting thing is for like my impression of the Congress so far, even like when we were talking earlier, in the view of my side, I see an SNES retro console emulated, people playing Mario Kart in SimCity, like one of my childhood games. So my ADHD brain is really triggered. And it's like really big stimulus from all kinds of directions. So like Dennis mentioned, you have personal development topics, you have technical topics where you can educate yourself, and you have lots of stimulation in lots of different ways. And it's so fun to what the kind of thing we have. We have this telephone network where you can call, and there are numbers, special numbers for special purposes. And for example, there's a number you can order tea, and someone brings tea to your place. So we have a special assembly called House of Tea, and I got a nice tea there today, I can recommend. We have people hacking all kinds of devices, from ancient telephony, ISDN networks, up to fiber splicing workshops and everything. And something that looks like a mammograph or something, I don't know what's over there. Ein Ultraschallgerät, yeah. And people are playing
ultrasound.
Ultrasound. It's crazy what kind of thing you use here. And what's happening right now in parallel to our podcast, which I'm telling very late so people don't run off and go over there, is what I would love to have been there. There's Pornophonic playing a concert right now. If you don't know, there's
Pornophonic, yeah.
It's a really cool band.
Creative Commons band, yeah.
Yes, so I'm missing out on that, but I'm hope like catching in the later. That's really cool. We have all those kinds of different assemblies, a project, like how I2P is a part of the CDC hall, where you have different kinds of other projects for decentralized network technologies. Last show, we talked about Radical, the alternative to have Git, a decentralized Git client. These people are around, and I talked with them a little bit. Let me check my notes quickly. I didn't write it down. A different kind of overlay network, also something with R. Never mind, I'll put it in the show notes. Different kinds of really interesting projects with really different approaches on how to improve our communication, how to make it available for everyone, how to protect yourself online. And there's people who you can teach to solder a CPU board for like €2. And it's like a crazy mix of everything here. So I believe for whatever your interest is and whatever your agenda is, you will find people like-minded here to talk to. And that is really awesome about the Congress.
Word. So do you want to talk about these other topics I can see in the possible future show notes? Or do we do some housekeeping because of the time?
Yeah, usually what we will switch now over to German for a moment. So again, thank you for being here, and we will switch to German now. Und damit wir jetzt mal ganz kurz wieder unsere übliche Hörerschaft abholen, unser Programm sieht normalerweise mit Updates ein bisschen anders aus, wenn wir so über Software-Updates reden. Wir haben sogar ein paar Notizen mitgebracht,
ja.
Die ich aber...
So 10 Minuten wahrscheinlich.
Ich weiß, deswegen, ich würde diese Notizen diesmal weglassen. Noch ein Gruß geht raus ans Freenet-Projekt, was extra ein kleines Kongress-Release für uns noch gerade veröffentlicht hat. Wenn ihr da mal reingucken wollt, in unseren Shownotes werden wir es verlinken. Aber wir haben ein anderes Thema und vielleicht sollten wir dafür die restliche Zeit aufwenden.
Okay, genau. Lass mich noch einen kurz einwerfen, weil das läuft auch jetzt gerade, aber es läuft nicht hier auf dem Kongress. Valorant hat vor kurzem seine Version 0.17 veröffentlicht. Ich berichte ja regelmäßig darüber in unserem Talk. Und die Release-Party auf ihrem offiziellen Server für diejenigen, die gerade Lust haben, was zu zocken, läuft jetzt gerade. Das war's.
Okay.
Genau, die wichtigen Sachen zuerst. Erst Valorant.
Ja, keine News-Launch oder Valorant.
Bitte, das muss sein.
Genau, wir haben eine kleine Ankündigung zu machen. Das ist alles überhaupt nicht dramatisch. Wir freuen uns auf jeden Fall auf das kommende Jahr mit der Linux-Launch. Und zwar ist es so, wir werden erstmal die gute Nachricht, wir werden die Folge 300 auf jeden Fall machen.
Ja.
Aber was danach ist...
Wissen wir auch noch nicht.
Also ich kann jetzt erstmal nur für dich sprechen. Ich habe mir, also all die Jahre, die wir die Linux-Launch jetzt schon machen, mit unterschiedlichen ModeratorInnen und mit euch beiden natürlich sowieso, hat mir eine Menge Spaß gemacht. Und es ist, deswegen gehe ich auch sehr, also bin ich da auch sehr, sehr positiv, was diese Verkündung angeht, dass wir tatsächlich mit der 300. Folge die Linux-Launch in ihrer jetzigen Form damit beenden quasi, damit abschließen. Und kriegen ja wenige Podcasts hin, dann irgendwann mal zu sagen, Leute, so nach, weiß ich nicht, fast nicht ganz 10 Jahren, könnte sogar hinkommen.
Könnte hinkommen.
Dass man dann irgendwann mal sagt, okay Leute, wir haben es geschafft. Ja, wir haben, erstmal sind sehr, sehr viele Projekte neben uns entstanden, die neu sich entwickelt haben und immens groß geworden sind, auf denen wir auch basieren. Ja, GNU Linux.ch beispielsweise als die Instanz schlechthin, zumindest im deutschsprachigen Raum, die auch eigene Podcasts und so weiter anbieten. Und und wir wollen natürlich jetzt noch das kommende Jahr, ne, bis zur Folge 300 mit euch zusammen entsprechend verbringen. Deswegen kündigen wir es jetzt hier an. Und das bedeutet dann, dass, ihr werdet sicherlich von uns hören, aber sehr wahrscheinlich nicht mehr unter dem Linux-Launch-Kontext und auch nicht mehr unter dem The Radio CC-Kontext.
Das ist etwas, was ich auch betonen will. Also wir hatten darüber lange diskutiert und auch für dich, Dennis, war es auch irgendwo mal ein Bedürfnis zu sagen, ich fände es schön, das abzuschließen, da irgendwie einen runden Punkt zu machen, und die Folge 300 ist ein wunderschöner runder Punkt dafür. Was jetzt nicht heißt, also jetzt spreche ich mal von meiner Seite, dass damit jetzt ein Ende für alles ist, sondern nur das Ende unter dem Konzept, wie es die Linux-Launch gerade gibt. Was nicht heißt, dass es nicht eventuell andere Formate, andere Konstellationen gibt, und so leicht wird man mich nicht los, sag ich mal. Aber
das muss den Zuhörern sagen, ich habe damit gar nichts zu tun.
Ja, ja.
Ich weiß, dass ich nicht, loswerde.
Wir halten uns da raus.
Aber genau. Also, ja.
Ja, also ich, genau. Das erstmal als Kerninfo. Und das bedeutet auch, dass ihr jetzt das kommende Jahr noch wir erstens auch aus den Vollen schöpfen werden in allem, was wir so tun. Und wenn ihr besondere Momente in der Vergangenheit oder so, also besondere Folgen, die ihr besonders spannend fand, besondere Themen, ja, die wir immer wieder gesetzt haben, auch immer wieder mal abgeändert haben, Schwerpunkte, die wir gesetzt haben, Interviews, die wir geführt haben, ja, mit IDK jetzt heute zum Beispiel über I2P, aber auch viele, viele andere, die wir in der Vergangenheit geführt haben, dann meldet uns die doch einfach mal. Ein Kommentar at the Radio CC oder über Social Media, also über natürlich das Fediverse, das einzige Social Media, was es gibt, über the Radio CC at socialtechnics.de. Das würde uns sehr freuen. Da bin ich mal gespannt, was denn so auf uns zukommt. Und es ist schön, dass wir heute nochmal hier zusammenkommen konnten, hier
vom Sendegate. Man sitzt sich gegenüber, da ist sowas auch tatsächlich auch ganz anders.
Sendezentrum,
und korrekt. Ich, also ganz kurz, bevor das jetzt zu melancholisch wird, wir sind noch da, wir sind noch das ganze Jahr über da, aber Ich wollte nur mal sagen, wir danken üblicherweise am Ende der Sendung immer ganz unseren Linux-Nachrichtenquellen, die wir immer so abgrasen, eine riesige Menge an RSS-Feeds und wo wir unsere Quellen so Nachrichten herkriegen, die wir aufarbeiten. Aber auch ein ganz fettes, liebes Dank an unsere Zuhörer. Wir sind eine Sendung, die jetzt nicht so viel, wir tracken keine großen Statistiken, wir machen das immer nur, weil wir Spaß daran haben. Und wir haben
keine Ahnung, wie viele ihr seid.
Dann kriegen wir immer so einzelne Nuggets per Rückmeldung in unserem Matrix-Chat im ISC-Chat und da danke ich mich auch super viel. Und auch auf jeden Fall super vielen Danke, dass das Sendegate es erlaubt hat, hier mal jetzt gerade den Tisch zu beschlagen. Ja, Chris.
Ich kann dem nur noch hinzufügen, ich weiß auch noch nicht, wie es nach der 300 aussieht. Wir müssen auch noch weiter darüber sprechen, wie ein zukünftiges Format aussehen kann, wer da dabei sein kann. Aber ja, danke allen, die uns immer fleißig begleiten, die uns vor allen Dingen auch Themen zu spielen. Da gibt es ja auch einige von
unseren
Zuhörern, die da immer wieder... Dann
so die Blogs unserer Zuhörer, da klauen wir die Themen und stellen sie voll brustig vor, als wären wir die Experten. Genau.
Ja, genau. Ja, das ist deswegen, wir wissen ja auch viel.
Ja. Zumindest tun wir die meiste Zeit deswegen so. Und das haben wir jetzt mehrere Jahre ganz gut durchgehalten.
Vielleicht Leute, die uns nicht wissen, wir senden übrigens monatlich. Also wenn wir sind jetzt gerade bei Folge 289 und die 300. Folge wären 11 Folgen. Das heißt, in 11 Monaten, da wird er uns noch 11 Mal uns ertragen müssen, wie wir euch über ein Stündchen aufs Ohr quatschen.
Genau. Und wer uns jetzt hört oder auch in Zukunft nochmal im Podcast dann quasi als aus der Dose, wenn da auch ehemalige ModeratorInnen zuhören oder mehrere ehemalige KontributorInnen, also Leute, die in der Vergangenheit uns im Chat entsprechend aufgelaut haben und zugearbeitet haben, dann meldet euch doch mal. Ja? Wir würden uns freuen, von euch zu hören.
Ich höre, wir machen eine technisch vollkommen kollabierende Live-Schaltung zu verschiedenen Leuten und da rein in die Sendung. Oder
wir sind doch Collage. Technisch versiert.
Wir kriegen laden sie alle in deine Küche ein.
Wir machen ein sehr spannendes Radio-Feature, würde ich behaupten.
Oh ja.
Im Vorbild des Deutschlandradios. Mal gucken. Ja.
Gut, ich blicke auf die Uhr. An diesem Punkt würde ich jetzt aber auch abmoderieren.
Gut, tu das.
Ich sehe ein Nicken, das geht jetzt normalerweise auch noch nicht so gut, deswegen. Wie gesagt, nochmal vielen Dank auch an unsere Zuhörer, vielen Dank an dich, Dennis, dass du dabei warst.
Ja, vielen Dank an euch beiden.
Vielen Dank, Chris.
Danke auch.
Und wenn ihr uns normalerweise hört, auch wenn das Sendegate großartig ist, streamen wir normalerweise auf Radio CC. Da findet ihr, wenn ihr das in den Browser eintippt, findet ihr die Linux Launch und da gibt es uns auch als zum Abonnieren für einen Podcast-Player eurer Wahl. Und wir würden uns freuen, wir sind ja noch eine Weile da und würde sagen, alle anderen, die jetzt noch auf dem Kongress sind, uns zuhören, einen wunderschönen Kongress und einen wunderschönen guten Rutsch ins neue Jahr.
Bis demnächst. Danke euch.
Wir hören uns.
Tschüss.
Bye-bye.
Jetzt kommt der Action. Ding, 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 ding. Der jetzt nochmal da wäre.